Last week on the Wintrust Business Lunch, about this time, actually it was a little later in the show, but either way, we visited with a woman named Amanda Hoover. She writes for Business Insider. In her article, Sneaky Rise of No Work Fridays, Employees Taking Three-Day Weekends, was intriguing. It launched a few days of conversation here about how some folks on Friday don't work at all or don't work as hard. Hybrid or at home, they find ways to keep the phone on, keep the laptop open, but maybe they're not working much, maybe they're not working at all. I said, boy, if Tom Gimbel is listening, we'll all be in trouble. Here's Tom Gimbel, the job expert and the founder of LaSalle Group. Hi, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, John. How are you?
LaSalle Network. You didn't hear that conversation, did you?
I heard a pinch of it on the radio, but not the whole thing, no.
It says a growing trend. Well, it says 3 days a week, and then they start telling the story of Annie, who spends 2 hours commuting to her job. So on Fridays, without telling workers, she just doesn't work. Now, there's two kinds of conversations that we had as a result of this. One is employers who are like, hey, if you got the work done, I don't care what you do on Friday. And it's almost a cooperative thing. And then there's the other people that find hacks to make it look like they're still working when they're not, but they still feel justified because nobody's complaining. They're getting their job assignments done. Anyway, what's your reaction to that? Do you hear about that, Tom? Is it a real thing?
Yeah, well, number one, I think that's been going on for a long time. There's always going to be people that try to skate the system, whether you have remote work in the office, what have you. To think that the idea of taking advantage of an employer is just starting now, I think would be naive for all of us, number one. Number two, the concept of is it okay, I think the answer is if you can't tell people what you're doing, then that's usually a sign that it's not right. If your kid doesn't tell you that they're doing something because they're afraid of getting in trouble, then it's not right. If your spouse doesn't think right, all these things. If you're hiding something, that's not right. I mean, there is sometimes just a matter of right and wrong.
That's interesting, isn't it? If it's okay, then you ought to be able to own up to it to your employer. But the way I was arguing it was that they don't own you. They ask you to do a job, and you get the job done. Sometimes in 30 hours, sometimes in 50 hours. So if you can front load your work schedule through Thursday and then have kind of an easy Friday, maybe you're at Costco, maybe you are golfing. I don't know what you're doing, but you're not working a full 8 on Friday. That's okay if you get the job done. What's your reaction to that?
So let me ask you a question, John. You hire a contractor to do work on your house and you have to move out. And on Friday, they don't come to work. They don't work. You don't own them. Are you happy?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Yeah, of course not. Because sometimes we don't think about things in a reciprocal nature. And we look at things and we say, okay, you want your doctor not to call you back on Friday? How about the police officer that says, you know what? On Thursday.
Well, you are asking though me to.
So on Friday, I'm not coming in.
I think those are apples and oranges, though. I mean, some things are time sensitive.
It's always apples and oranges to people who want to cheat the system, John.
Yeah. I'll finish that thought, though, that the contractor or the police officer do need to physically be on the job to get it done. You can't patrol the streets.
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people who are hacking the system, keeping their laptop open while they go in the swimming pool and aren't doing things. There's very different things between working remotely and hacking the system to not be working at all.
I wonder what the takeaway for employers is, though. Like, your argument is persuasive, Tom, but there it is. So I wonder what the employer needs to do about that. Monitor
at the end of the day, at the end of the day, you know, the best manager of the 20th century was Jack Welch, and that was voted on by people and all that other stuff. And he had a theory of you should cut the bottom 10% of performers in every unit, whether it's accounting or marketing or sales, right? And at the end of the day, people say, oh, well, employers aren't loyal to employees if they do that. And eventually, if you give people enough rope, they hang themselves. And so if people want to behave that way, they can't be upset when they get let go for those types of reasons. And at the end of the day, if you're a top performer, here's the interesting dynamic, and call it the Michael Jordan theory or the Tiger Woods theory. The best people get the longest leash. The ironic thing is the best people usually don't take advantage of it. That's why they're the best.
That's Tom Gimbel. He's the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network. It's always nice to talk to you, Tom. Interesting insight. I'm glad you were able to sort of chime in on that from last week. Thanks for giving us your thoughts.
Work hard, vacation often. Take care.
That's another way to think about it. Once again, 708 says Tom Gimbel is 100% correct. I always take pictures of these text messages and then send them to Tom as a little thank you. You're expected to work 40 hours, exclamation point. You were hired. You need to go to work. All responses to what he was talking about. If all the work is done, 847 said, then how is that cheating? John, you don't seem to understand the outside world. These are cheaters that don't work a full 8 hours on Friday. John, if the contractor is done with the job on Thursday, why would he come on Friday? That wasn't the point. And finally, if the employee is afraid to say something about the fact that they don't work real hard on Friday, that is a symptom of poor leadership. Okay, I'll send all of those to Mr. Gimbel. Let's talk to Philip Weiss, who's actually kind of in that lane with us today. Philip Weiss is the president of SciFarth at Work. SciFarthAtWork.com is their website, and he's talking today about senior executive side gigs. Philip, where we were talking with Tom about people who don't work real hard on Fridays, maybe they are side hustling, but mostly it's about them just relaxing or working less hard. You were talking about executives who are finding a side hustle, right?
Yeah, I mean, in fact, John, this might effectively be the polar opposite of what you and Tom were discussing.
Yeah, right.
On the one hand, we're looking at a trend, really, that is taking hold with, as you said, senior leaders, the C-suite, the top executives. And what they're doing is they're increasingly saying, I love my job, I love my company, but I want to explore more. I want to be more creative. I want to flex business muscles that maybe I'm not using in this job. And they're finding the best way to do it is to, in one form or another, take on consulting gigs or these senior executive side jobs. And what's really fascinating, John, is historically, top-level leaders have been asked to serve on boards of other organizations. That's not very unusual. But the idea that you would actually engage in consulting work where you're giving daily advice, you're playing a more substantive role for an entirely different company, that's new and a really interesting trend.
What's an example of this? I'm trying to think of the senior executive who would have the time, or whose absence or maybe participation in another company wouldn't be noticed. Can you give me an example?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting way you frame that question. What we found, just in terms of a response to this kind of challenge, how do they fit it in? The people that do it are people who've been with a company so long and
right.
have such deep experience that they've got this institutional knowledge. They're not coasting, but they have the freedom of being able to split their attention, not on a daily basis, but often enough to be valuable to another organization. And a quick example, John, since you asked, we've worked with a CFO of a retail company, pretty big retail chain. And in his daily job, he's under a lot of pressure to keep costs low, to boost profits wherever he can, as you might imagine. His kind of secret passion is sustainability in the environment. So for his consulting, he started working for not-for-profits based on eco solutions. And he has brought back to his primary employer great ideas, marketing ideas to connect with local eco groups, more sustainable packaging that actually was more cost-effective than what his company was using. So he's turned the penchant for a side gig into actually a bottom line plus for his primary employer.
Like the conversation we had with Tom, though, if I'm getting the job done, I'm keeping costs low, and I'm not exactly sure what responsibilities a senior executive has, but if they can justify the accomplishments of their workload, and they can find more time to do something else, either because it's a passion or they want to pick up more money. What's your reaction to that in principle?
Yeah, well, I've got two reactions. One is everyone's got to be on the same page in terms of the fact that the primary job is the absolute priority and must be the priority for this executive. So they can't either get distracted or lose focus. And they got to be expectations set on that front. But on the other hand, what's amazing, John, is so many executives who've done this successfully have said to us, I actually got this renewed passion for my primary role. My mind freed itself to basically recommit to something I've been doing the same way for decades. So if you've got the ability to divide focus a little bit, you end up with a plus for both organizations. And in many cases, John, these execs are helping startups. So they're working with people that are new to business, a lot of creative ideas, a lot of very agile approaches, and they can often repurpose some of those strategies in their more perhaps staid, set environments of their number one job. So it's kind of an interesting take on what you and Tom were discussing, but it's got to be done with a priority being job one is always priority one.
Philip, I'm thinking about non-competes. So often employees, and certainly high-level employees, have non-competes where they can't go work for another company or in the market, say, for a year or more. And I'm wondering how this relates to that. Aren't the contracts structured so that you can't have outside employment? Aren't there rules about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Some companies have fairly strict non-competes. But what we're seeing when this arrangement works is either an exception is carved out or the non-compete relates to the industry itself in which the company is operating. So a lot of these side gig, side hustling execs are actually leaving their industry and going to an entirely different area. For example, the real estate gentleman who focused on sustainability companies. We have a VP of human resources at a company that's all about tech, working in non-tech environments for her consulting work. So that helps because you're not creating this inherent conflict. Plus, to your point, John, you absolutely have to honor all confidentiality, intellectual property, and privacy requirements. So you have to be able to know where to draw the line on what you're sharing with both companies. And often it's a different industry to keep the conflict risks very limited, if not non-existent.
Then do they need to execute that plan for all the employees? It's okay if you take another job at another firm while you're working for us?
Yeah, a lot of these companies that have allowed this at the top level also allow it generally. And what's really fascinating about that question, John, is often you have to do a more thorough job as the company to explain these rules to newer employees, meaning the senior people understand their fiduciary obligations, their number one responsibility to the number one employer, so to speak. It's the people that are newer that don't always get that. And frankly, just like some people might want to like just check out, a lot of people need the extra income from a second job. As we know, they need to have those lines clarified for them in terms of intellectual property, private processes, company information, et cetera.
I think if I were to take a second job while working my job, I would at least get one that was completely different from what I was doing. Like, I'd like to be a landscaper. I would work for a bar and be a bartender. I would, that's actually too much like what I do, but I would like to do something that was outdoors. And, you know, if somebody said, hey, we need you to mow that lawn, I would say, thank you, sir. May I have another? I wonder if you do see that out there, that in fact, it's not in the same stream. They tend to do something completely different.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's the sort of secret ingredient when these arrangements are truly most successful. And you look at people and they glance at their later retirement bucket list, and they're saying, I want to do that kind of very different activity or experience. Let me try to do it now in a professional environment so I get that kind of dynamic buzz from working with a group of people that are really trying to accomplish something on a daily basis. So to your point, if it's a different industry, if it's a different focus, It actually is a much fresher, more meaningful, and potentially beneficial experience for all parties involved.
One of my old program directors is now working in a grocery store behind the deli counter, and I think he's happier, and I don't blame him for that. Philip Weiss is the president of SciFarth at Work, SeyFarth, SciFarth at Work. Nice to talk to you, Philip.
It's a pleasure, John, and thank you.
John Williams here. We're joined by Philip Shaw, senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. GoldstoneFinancialGroup.com is their website. I thought we'd spend much of the time, maybe most of the time, talking about tariffs, but I don't want to say it's a moot point, but at least it's on hold for a while, huh, Philip?
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. The tariff issue is going to be interesting, and you and I had talked about it a little bit before, but it seems to be more of a, call it a negotiating point, or a tool in the arsenal for negotiation than something the administration really seems like they want to implement for the long term.
Right. So not necessarily an economic tool, but a political one.
Yeah, I mean, it can definitely be used as an economic tool, but so far with what we've seen on the tariffs that were imposed on Mexico and Canada over the weekend, obviously both of those have already been paused at least for 30 days while they're still continuing the negotiations. And really what the administration seemed to want out of it was border security more than an actual economic issue.
Although the president does say that we have a trade deficit with Canada, that's unfair. He says that about China and Mexico too. China maybe because they're subsidizing businesses and they cheat. I'm not exactly sure what the dynamics are with China, with Canada, but I do know that as a percent, the deficits that we have with Canada are very small compared to other countries. I was a little sort of confused as to why we were suddenly so angry at Canada that we would take our neighbor to the north and declare a 25% tariff on them, right? If it wasn't for fentanyl or migrants, that's marginal. Then what's the economic gain we have to get? And was it worth this bomb that we dropped on everybody as a result? I don't know what your reaction to all of that is.
I mean, my initial impression is in line with what the administration said before, which is they're looking to try to bring manufacturing back to the United States and encourage some of the manufacturers that are, you know, in a lot of cases, just across the border. You know, if you're talking about right across the river outside of Detroit, we used to have Detroit Auto Manufacturing, and it moved, you know, all of a couple of miles in a lot of cases across the river into Canada. There does seem to be some motivation to bring that back and in general try to bring back some of the jobs that we used to have domestically back into the United States.
Yeah. It seems to me that consumers are the ultimate, you know, beneficiaries or victims of these sorts of policies. And that at the end of the day, the relationship between Mexico, the United States, and Canada, the car parts will travel sometimes a half a dozen times in between the two countries before we finally have a car. And that's because of scales of economy and efficiencies and government policies. But at the end of the day, you get a cheaper Ford in Chicago as a result of what's happening. Do you think that these policies that the president is asking to be changed, the changes he's asking for, do you think that would, say, affect the price of cars or blue jeans or cereal? And if so, how?
I definitely think there are some areas that could see inflation because of this. I'm less concerned that it's going to be, a 25% tariff does not mean that everything we spend money on here is going to go up by 25%. That's certainly not going to be the case. For some things, some automobiles or other purchases definitely can. You know, if you turn on any news outlet right now, you'll hear arguments both directions of will this be inflationary, will it not be inflationary? If one car becomes more expensive, will I just buy a different one? You know, for some of this, we're going to have to see what the long-term outlook is or what the long-term impact is. I think the biggest thing that nobody wants is nobody wants a tit-for-tat trade war between any of the countries or any of the bodies that we're talking about. We don't want one with Canada going back and forth. We don't want with Mexico. We certainly don't want with China. And I don't think China does either.
Do you think... having just said that, isn't that in fact what we've just sort of asked for, though. Canada at least threatened a 25% tariff. Mexico's on hold as well, but we don't know how that's going to play out. China has, in fact, slapped tariffs on us now, right?
China did respond, but they responded in a cautious manner.
Yeah.
China is a massive exporter. They really don't want to end up being on the receiving end of significant tariffs. They don't want to become the expensive place to manufacture because that is, to date, still a huge part of their economy. So it seems to have been measured actions going back and forth. We'll see what that looks like, but so far everything I've seen says we're dipping our toe in the water with this, but nobody's hoping for a significant, you know, I call it tit for tat, back and forth on these things.
You think that we've all overreacted to the president's plans?
No, I don't think we've overreacted. I think it's a time with a lot of uncertainty. You know, that's why everyone wants to talk about it and discuss it. We haven't seen this scale of action this fast really ever in our lifetimes. The last 2 weeks have been a whirlwind of new actions, of new policies, of cutting government spending, of negotiating with trade partners. It's been a whirlwind, and I think everybody's a little taken back of how to handle that and what's going to matter, and we don't have any time to digest it.
Yeah. Well, I will ask you in a second, when will the consumers start to feel this? For instance, if manufacturing came back to the United States more robustly, I wonder how long before we actually see more American jobs. You can't just say, okay, we're going to start building more cars in the United States, or, you know, we're going to suddenly get more lumber and therefore prices will go down, or you know, it would take a while for us to feel the impacts of any of these things, right?
I think that is years into the future. To your point, is you can't just flip the switch and turn a factory back on. I think that lead time is 2-3 years out at minimum in most of these cases.
Yeah. And yet, if we did have a crystal ball and a few years from now, all of these things did bear fruit and it was positive for America. Too bad for Mexico and China. But it was better for America, and that's what the president campaigned on. That's what people asked for. So perhaps in order to accomplish any of these things, you do need to move at breakneck speed. You do need to wield the big stick. I suppose we might look back on this moment of uncertainty as a natural reaction to the suddenness of it, but maybe it will bear fruit. Maybe these policies, however, you know, rough right now, might, in retrospect, have been just what we needed. Your thought about that, Philip?
I agree. I think at the pace in which our world moves, you know, you look at a typical presidency, and I'm not saying good or bad, but a typical presidency has 2 years, really 18 months to do anything.
Yeah.
So they're in for 4 years, but they you know, run the risk of losing, you know, control of the other bodies of government in 18 months to 2 years. It really does not give a lot of time to enact policy and meaningful change. So you may be right. It may be that we have to act this quickly in order to accomplish anything.
Hmm. I wanted to ask you about the Social Security Fairness Act a little bit, too. I'll pause here and maybe we'll pick it up there in a minute. We're talking to Philip Shaw. He's a senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. Right now, though, we've got more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's Grubhub has reported a cyber breach. The company says hackers accessed the personal details of customers and drivers after breaching internal systems. The food delivery platform has more than 375,000 merchants and 200,000 drivers in 4,000 cities. During the hack, the personal details of customers, merchants, and drivers who interacted with Grubhub's customer care service were accessed. That info included names, email addresses, phone numbers, and partial payment card information, including the last four digits of card numbers. United Airlines will add 6 more gates at O'Hare Airport this year. Cranes reports the gate expansion is part of a new lease agreement with the city. United currently operates out of 88 gates. The Chicago-based airline accounted for 52% of departures at O'Hare last year, but only had 48% of the gates. Air Wisconsin will lay off 200 workers at O'Hare. The airline recently ended its agreement with American Airlines as part of the American Eagle network. The cuts will also impact Mitchell Airport in Milwaukee. I'm Steve Krasanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We call it the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And the Super Bowl is coming up, and for the 18th year in a row, the Bears will not be there. But Chicago is well represented. Hal, after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today, there's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, the item most important to the Super Bowl comes from the farm. Yeah, that's right. The football. Actually, footballs.
Out of one cowhide, they'll probably get, oh gosh, probably 8 footballs.
That is Skip Horween, president of Horween Leather Company, the great-grandson of the founder. And Horween supplies Chicago's very own Wilson Sporting Goods with the leather to make footballs for the NFL.
My grandfather used to say the great irony of our businesses, you know, we take a hide that came off an animal that was round, and the first thing we do is make it flat, and you send it back to Wilson, and to make it a new ball, they got to make it round again.
Wilson has a new plant in Ada, Ohio, where 108 footballs are being made for the Super Bowl out of Horween's leather, which goes through a couple of weeks of processing before it goes to Wilson.
We buy hides of a certain type. It's a heavy steer hide, and then it's pre-tanned first to remove the hair so we can grade it. I mean, it's very much like grading wood. You want clear grains. And then we do a second tanning, a retanning, determining the full characteristic of the ball and also putting in the blend of, you know, waxes and things that we have in there that will eventually give the ball that extra little bit of grippiness.
Horween Leather Company is over on Elston, along the river. They've been there for a while.
105 years in that spot and 120 years in business this year.
Skip has about 110 employees who tan leather not just for NFL footballs, but NBA basketballs and many, many other products. But to watch the Super Bowl and know that those footballs came from them?
That's pretty cool.
That is cool, and I'm sure as important as Horween leather is to the game that the NFL gives you some tickets, right? I guess not. Horween leather and Wilson Sporting Goods, Chicago's representatives at the Super Bowl. On the food calendar, it's National Homemade Soup Day. Yum. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
We're talking with Philip Shaw right now. He is over at Goldstone Financial. Talk to me a little bit about this Social Security Fairness Act and maybe what I should know, Phil.
Yeah, so the Social Security Fairness Act, so they passed this in the last weeks of the Biden administration. This is a big deal for a lot of people in retirement. So what this was is if you were a government employee and you had a government pension, whether that was you were a teacher, you know, say a TRS employee, Teacher Retirement System Illinois, or you had a government pension from the city of Chicago or one of the municipalities, you had a reduction to any Social Security benefits you could receive. So if you were on a government pension and you'd also qualified for Social Security, basically you didn't get all of both.
Right.
They rescinded this a few weeks ago. So this is a big deal for a lot of people going into and a lot of people planning for retirement. And it's a big deal for us when we start talking about, you know, even the long-term viability of Social Security. But one of the things I wanted to make sure people were aware of is there are people that may have never even thought that this would apply for them. So I know people, and I'm running into more all the time, who were, say, a lifetime educator. They worked for Teacher Retirement System their entire career, and they never put in enough time to qualify for their own Social Security benefits. But they were married to somebody who did. Now, in the past, it didn't bother to even file for the benefits because your pension would reduce anything you'd receive on a spousal Social Security benefit. Now that this has been rescinded, that's not the case anymore. So if you're married to somebody who never, if you're married to somebody, you didn't have to fulfill 40 quarters of benefits to receive their spousal benefits. So your spouse received their full benefit. You received one half of their benefit, and you never had to pay you never had to work day one in a job putting into Social Security.
Wow. You know,
these two programs, the GPO affects some 750,000 people, the windfall elimination, another 2 million. I think those numbers are low. I think there's a lot of people this applies to.
So I know somebody who falls into that category, lifelong public employee, married to somebody who worked part-time at Marshall Fields or as a realtor or, you know, in the private sector, but it was part-time for several years. Would that impact that family, do you think?
Absolutely. So the spouse who's receiving Social Security on their, what they call their own earnings record, still receives all of their benefits. Their spouse can now go file as well and receive half of that as well. And if you're somebody who never, you know, if you didn't file before and now you're, call it 70 years old, congratulations. You also deferred those years and have a higher benefit for it.
Yeah, right. How far back does this go? Are they making it retroactive for all the years that you weren't getting the money that you could have?
You know, it'd be nice if they did, but it's going back to the beginning of 2024.
Okay.
So they're going to pay retroactive for... They're going to pay retroactive for last year. They're going to pay the higher amount going forward. The downside is we don't know when they're going to fix it.
Right.
They're saying it might take as much as a year before they actually have this settled and squared away. By the way, Congress passed this. The president signed it, but they did not give Social Security any more money to fund it. So this also does, you know, we talk about the long-term viability of Social Security. This does put a little bit of extra pressure on that program.
Does the current Congress and president support this? Is it in jeopardy with a new Congress or administration?
I don't think this is in jeopardy from anything to do with the current administration. We haven't heard anything about it. This would be incredibly unpopular to rescind.
It's amazing. It's
more
amazing
than anything. Yeah. They have to fix Social Security.
Understood. But it's amazing that they were shortchanging people all along. It's remarkable to me that this even happened.
I understood the initial logic of it was, you know, it was trying to avoid people double dipping on government benefits. That's not how it ended up. It really, more than anything, just, you know, impacted people who honestly had paid into the programs and honestly should have been receiving benefits. So I totally agree with you.
Is this something you are working with clients yourself, Philip?
Absolutely. So I have more than a few people this is going to apply to. And I'm making sure we're going back. Anyone who is a government employee, anybody who is a teacher, we're going to make sure we're reviewing it. Let's take advantage of absolutely everything that we can.
Philip Shaw is a senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group, goldstonefinancialgroup.com. Okay, very timely. Thanks for your help today, Philip.
Thanks for having me.